Welcome to Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Patrick, one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Pat Schlarbaum. Hello, Pat. And you've got a special report for us about Purple Martins.
Yes, hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener. Yes, today we're going to start off with a Purple Martin phonology, and I've invited a great Purple Martin fancier, farmer, a steward, Tim Gedler from the Walnut Woods State Park.
We'll look forward to that. And later today, we'll also be discussing the Republic Convention with former State Representative Teresa Garman. And did you know, Pat, that Ames is hosting a World Series this week?
A World Series? Oh, well, that's pretty fascinating.
Yep. It's the World Series of the National Beep Baseball Association. And it's the second time it's been held in Ames. Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau will bring a special guest to talk about this event. But first of all, I want to spread the word about how quick and professional action has recently presented a tragedy in Huxley. It happened last Thursday, July the 21st, when a man in his 30s was working on a wind turbine, and his co-workers lost contact with him. He'd apparently fallen into the turbine and was unconscious in there. However, he was rescued by the Huxley Fire Department and the turbine company's own rescue personnel. Life Flight from Unity Point in Des Moines transported the man to hospital.
Wow, this is pretty amazing. Was he wearing a safety harness?
Yes, apparently he was, but we don't know whether there was equipment failure or much else about it. But it's wonderful that it all ended well. So we'll just hope, you know, he has a good recovery in hospital.
Yes, we do. Well, and today, let's start a phonology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first hepatica, which is a wildflower of spring or the last osprey of autumn, are noted in a journal for future reference. So today's focus on phonology are purple martins. Young of the year purple martins in Iowa are fledging, are leaving their nest cavities. They are flying freely on their own. And purple martins are a rather large-looking swallow with an amazing flight skills and wonderful twitterings and calls. The color is a glossy, dark, deep blue. So if you are so fortunate to attract nesting purple martins, they pioneer into nest structures and grow into a colony in a few years. Historically, they were known to nest in gourds near Native American communities, and they occupy cavities which are created by woodpeckers in dead or dying trees. Purple martins are one of America's favorite birds. Their arrival each spring, about the third week of March, is a much-heralded event in many backyards. And their departure each fall marks the passing of another year for many. And in the eastern U.S., purple martins almost exclusively nest in purple martin houses and gourds provided by humans. And in the west, they nest more regularly in the natural cavities that I mentioned that are created by the woodpeckers in dead or dying trees, which are called snags. Martin nests typically have from 5 to 6 white eggs. One egg is laid each day at sunrise, and no days are skipped until the egg laying stops. Incubation lasts about 15 days, but may last longer in cooler weather. Purple martins fledge in about 25 to 35 days after hatching. Egg laying commences after copulation occurs, which is usually in the nest cavity or the nest box. Females lay one egg per day, usually in the morning, for a total of 2 to 7 pure white eggs. After the penultimate or the next to last egg is laid, females begin incubation. Only females can incubate eggs because only they have the brood patch. And a brood patch is a featherless area on their abdomen. It is an area rich in blood vessels that transfer heat to the eggs, and males may incubate the eggs for short periods of time while the female leaves the nest. Before she returns. So 15 to 16 days later, the eggs begin to hatch. The eggs may not hatch on the same day, but rather it can be spread out over 2 to 3 days. And once the young have hatched, both parents begin feeding the young, and pin feathers and downy feathers begin to emerge after 7 to 10 days. Fledging occurs 26 to 32 days after hatching in mid-July. The young receive care from their parents for 1 or 2 weeks after fledging or their first flight. During this time, the young may return to their housing to spend the night. So this timeline brings us to this time of year in July. And after fledging, juvenile purple martins, as well as adults and subadults, will congregate at a roost. Large flocks of martins gather to spend the night at these roosts, which are usually situated near water. Martins will then form smaller groups and begin migration from these roosts, although individual roosts remain active for 6 weeks or longer. Purple martins winter in South America. The journey can be as long as 5,000 miles each way each year. So our purple martins move through the Mississippi Flyway. During the winter season, these birds are apparently concentrated chiefly in the Amazon Valley of Brazil, but are found in other parts of Central and South America also. Noted ornithologist or bird biologist at the turn of the 20th century, Alexander Sprunt, said about purple martins in the Bent Life series of bird life history, quote, "It has always seemed to me that literature has been somewhat chary of the purple martin. Song and story have long stressed the advent of robin, bluebird, and goose as heralds of spring, and so they are. But is the martin any less so? True, it comes somewhat later than these others, but who can fail to thrill when on a waking early morning one hears the rich gurgling calls of the first martin? It is a signal that spring is really at hand, indeed at one's very door. When the martins come, can summer be far behind? This largest of the swallows, in its handsomely glossy, deep dark blue, whether slurred by literature or not, has a favorite with humanity for many generations. Even before the white man came to America's shores, it was a village bird in the Indian communities, and its status as such is unchanged today. It is, beyond all doubt, the bird box species of this country. Its range is extensive, almost universal indeed, and it occurs from coast to coast and border to border. Young and old admire it, encourage it, and protect it, and those who have a word of criticism for it are few and far between. Most purple martin stewards have never talked to anybody who dislikes the martin. Some birds occupy high pedestals in human regard, typified by the robin in the north and the mockingbird in the south. But in North and South, the purple martin comes and goes as a welcome arrival and regretful departure, and always invited avian neighbor. Few are those anywhere who would fail to subscribe heartily to the wish, may its tribe increase. Yeah, so purple martins are flying and calling even as we speak, and that's our phonology for purple martins for today. And now on the line is Tim Gedler, park ranger for the Department of Natural Resources at Walnut Woods State Park, south side of Des Moines. And Tim, welcome to Local Talk.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, great to hear your voice, Tim. So tell us a bit about Walnut Woods State Park.
Walnut Woods is kind of on the southwest edge of Des Moines. It's actually a growing part of the metro area. We're right off of the Interstate 35 and the newer Highway 5 bypass area. And it's situated along the Raccoon River. The Raccoon River makes up the northern boundary of the park. The park's about 250 acres.
Uh-huh.
And consists mostly of bottomland floodplain timber. So not a super big park, but very popular since we're close to the interstate. We have a small campground for camping and a very popular rental lodge that people use for day use activities or weddings and family reunions, and then we have some hiking trails. It's a wonderful bird watching spot.
Oh yeah,
for the local folks around and travelers alike. With the Raccoon River there, over 200 species of birds have been spotted within the park.
Okay.
Warblers, flycatchers, and especially during the migration, it can be pretty exciting place to go bird watching.
Yeah, and it's got the giant walnut trees. It's just a beautiful state park. I hope people can go there and appreciate the water. Tell us about your water resources there close by.
Yeah, well, I mentioned the Raccoon River there, which is a very important river for the local Des Moines metro area and surrounding, where it supplies drinking water. The local waterworks company takes water from the Raccoon River to be treated for drinking water. And
yeah.
then surrounding the park are there's quite a few, there's at least four quarry areas that were formerly used for mining of sand and gravel. And as these quarries become depleted and no longer being mined, the local waterworks is purchasing these areas and using them as little holding areas for the pumping drinking water out of
yeah.
addition to the river. And we have, there is some issues with nitrates in the Raccoon River due to the pesticides and herbicides that get into the water. And these quarries actually act as natural places for the nitrates in the water to dissipate naturally. And so they're desirable for the waterworks folks to have for drinking water purposes. And yeah. while at the same time they're doing that, they are preserving urban green space for folks to come out and enjoy for fishing and bird watching and,
yeah, and other recreation. You bet. That water resource is attracting bald eagles, ospreys, and purple martins.
Correct.
So, yeah, tell us about your purple martin work.
Well, I got this started, it's been over about 5 years ago. We had a DNR email, and I've been a bird watcher since a young boy delivering newspapers on the south side of Des Moines. Mm-hmm. Saw my first great blue heron land on somebody's swing set in their backyard, and just little sightings like that got me interested in birds. But I've always had a love for birds. But I saw a DNR email about a purple martin seminar over in Kelowna, Iowa. The Amish community is very active with purple martins in eastern Iowa. And so I went to a seminar over there in Kelowna, Iowa, and met some of these purple martin landlords. And I've always had an interest in building wood duck houses and nesting structures for birds. And I left that seminar and went home and immediately built my own purple martin house and got it up in time for the spring. And they're my passion for purple martins began.
Yeah, these houses are really kind of condominiums. How big are the cavities in each of these purple martin rooms?
Well, traditionally, in the very old school type martin houses, they were 6 inches by 6 inches. But research has shown that martins do much better with a larger cavity. And so most housing now is built for 6 by 12 cavities. Mm-hmm. This gets the martins further back away from the entrance. The nest is usually built clear in the back of that 12-inch cavity in the martin house, and that keeps the baby safer from predators such as owls and the accipiter hawks, the Cooper's hawks, and the sharp-shinned hawks love to prey on these martin colonies. And so it's helped a lot for protection of the nest, and as well as just the research has shown that more eggs are laid in these slightly larger cavities.
Yeah, that's super. So you're at your site there on the near the Raccoon River. Tell us about what you're seeing there this morning.
This morning, as I pulled up, there were quite a few there martins on the housing. I counted close to 24 martins. This is only the second year for this site. It took 2 years on this quarry site to get my first nest here, and I had 2 nests last year, and this year we expanded to 10 nests, which I was very happy with. That's somewhat unusual to go from, usually it's more of a gradual increase, but had 10 nests this year, and they've been fledging all this month, those 10 nests. I've only have like 3 nests left with young in it that mm-hmm. need to leave their house, leave their cavity for the season. So, but they were perched on top of the house, and I could tell mixed in there were a lot of the young martins that were just took their first flight here in the last week or two.
Yeah. And we had some cold weather. Share with us how you steward or provide for those birds when there's not many insects out.
Yes.
With the crickets.
One of the joys of the hobby, it is a lot of work. Taking care of purple martins, checking the nests and so forth. But really, in the early spring, late March, very early April, as you well know, we can have snow and just freezing temperatures. And in the summertime, like right now, just in the last couple weeks, we've had some very heavy rain, and the bugs don't fly. And the martins, being aerial insectivores, they need bugs to be flying. Mm-hmm. But in cool weather, landlords very commonly these days, they will in the off season purchase crickets from a cricket supply vendor. Mm-hmm. Usually these are larger crickets, 3/4 to 1 inch long, and freeze them and have them ready for cold weather when the martins come back. It's not uncommon for martins to freeze to death inside the martin house after they get back just due to the cold weather. But one way we can combat that is do what's called supplemental feeding of the martins. And I've grown to enjoy this part of the hobby. You thaw out your crickets in some warm water, and you can stand underneath your martin colony with a larger plastic spoon, and you place crickets on the spoon and flip them into the air, and the martins, it can take a while. I did it for the first time this year, this spring, when it was cool, and you know, I could tell the martins were hungry. They were sitting on top of the house, wings kind of drooping, and I knew the bugs hadn't been flying for 3 or 4 days, and that they were hungry, and so that's the best time to try to introduce your birds to the supplemental feeding. But sure enough, after about flipping 20 to 30 crickets in the sky, that first martin went after one of those crickets, and it didn't take long then that the whole colony of birds took to it. And so you flip the crickets up in the sky, and martins just eat those crickets, and you can get them through these cold weather spells.
Yeah.
And then I also have erected a tray on a pole that, and I was flipping the crickets underneath this tray. And then when I get done flipping the crickets, then I'll just fill the tray with crickets. And they've learned how to eat from that feeding tray now as well.
They're pretty good acrobats in the air, aren't they?
Oh my, that's what draws, I think, most landlords to the hobby is just, I find myself just sitting for, you know, over an hour watching the acrobatics, the dives, the swoops. They're just a wonderful bird to watch fly in the sky.
Yeah, I think when we introduce the topic of watchable wildlife species, the purple martin is right up there with some of the best, just in their aerial antics. And also, you've started a second colony just east of your house. Tell us about your cornfield site.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's where I first started trying to get purple martins, was at my home, which is just outside the park. Martins don't like trees. They like a more open site, at least 60 to 80 feet of open space all around their house. But even then, if you've got a lot of trees, it can take a while. And at my home where I started, I got my first nest this season after waiting 5 years. So it's not easy anymore to get martins, but to get the, what really helped me was my home situated along the edge of a soybean field on, well, just corn or soybeans each year. And I actually had to talk to the farmer that farms and coax him into letting me move my martin pole out a little bit further away into the open, into the field. And it helps that I own a portion of the field that where I got the pole. But this year I got my first martin nest at home. And yes, it's right out in the middle, not in the middle, but in the corn, 8 or 9 foot tall corn. But I have been keeping about a 20 to 30 foot diameter area cleared around the pole. And so when the martin started nesting, the corn, of course, was barely coming out of the ground. And my thought was that if I did get a nest out there in the corn, that by the time the eggs were laid, that those parent martins would be committed to that nest, which it worked like a charm. I did just have the one pair, but they laid 6 eggs, and 5 of the eggs hatched, and all 5 of those babies I watched leave the house and take their first flight, and the corn didn't seem to bother them. By the time they left the nest, the corn was, like I said, 8 or 9 feet tall, and the martin house is about maybe 14 feet off the ground.
So. Yeah, only in Iowa, purple martins over the cornfields. It's got to be the envy of a lot of purple martin managers.
Yeah, that it may be the only martin house in a cornfield.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing all these insights. Tim, is there anything else you'd like to include with your purple martin work?
No, other than, you know, I'm happy to help folks out that are interested in purple martins and getting started. It's a lot of work, but it's the dedication pays off when you get those martins to where you can just enjoy them.
Yeah. Well, purple martins are flying and calling even as we speak. So that's our phenology on nesting purple martins for today. Thank you, Tim Gedler. Thank you for all you do for conservation.
You're welcome. Thank you, Pat. Yeah.
Thank you, Tim.
Bye.
Another day out on the road, another night, wish I was home, laying next to you, home in my comfort zone. Hotel rooms, they all look the same, snow keeps falling, then freezing rain, need to be with you, home in my comfort zone. Time passes so slowly without you. Another lonesome town, another lonely night of the blues. Another day out on the road, another night, wish I was home, laying next to you, home in my comfort zone. Job, it's getting old, money's good, too much time alone, just need to hold you, home in my comfort zone. Another week is almost gone, can't call you now on this dead phone, soon I'll be with you, home in my comfort zone. Passes so slowly without you. Another lonesome town, another lonely night of the blues. Another day out on the road, another week, it's almost gone. Need to be with you, home in my comfort zone. Soon I'll be with you, home in my comfort zone.
That was Al Harris singing Home in My Comfort Zone from his album The Land Between the Two Rivers. Now we welcome Alison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, who's our regular guest on the fourth Monday of the month. Welcome, Alison.
Good morning.
And today she's brought a special guest, Jan Traphagen, with her. Jan is the first vice president of the National Beep Basketball Association, the NBBA,
right,
and chairman of the World Series Tournament Committee. So we've got a World Series here.
That's
in
right.
Ames.
Right, that's here right. In Ames, Iowa this week.
And it's being held this week in Ames. So welcome, Jan and
Thank
Alison.
You.
Well, first off, I guess you should explain what beep basketball is for our listeners that don't know.
Okay, beep baseball.
Baseball, basketball.
That's okay.
Baseball.
It's outside. Beep baseball is baseball for the blind and visually impaired. And it is a game played outside, and it's just it's like baseball. And many years ago in 1970s, they had to take the rules of baseball and tweak them just a little bit because people are blind. It is a game that we have baseballs that beep. It was invented in 1964 by a man named Charlie Fairbanks out in Denver. He was a Denver pioneer, but he was a person who worked in Mountain Bell when the Bell system was still together.
Oh.
And he actually made it was a crude ball, and it's been updated years and years and years gone by. Mm. But it was done in 1964, and we're still using the beep baseball. Mm. We also have two pylons that are about 5 feet tall.
So and those are like the bases.
Yes, so, yeah. We have two bases. We
so
don't have second
three.
Base.
Yeah.
Right,
okay.
We don't have second base. Because if you can imagine a batter running across the field of all fielders, we'd be having collisions everywhere. So we just have a first base and a third base. And the first and third base are both 100 feet down the baseline from home plate.
So it's a long and way.
Then, yes,
bigger than
and then
regular.
Years later, we actually had a rule change. It was really great. We have the bases are now 10 feet out from the baseline on first base and third base because we were having so many collisions also when they were trying to find the ball. The fielders were trying to find the ball, mm-hmm. and the batter was running down the baseline, and they were colliding. So we have the bases now 10 feet out from the baseline. But if when and your pitcher and your catcher are on the same team as your batter and you're in with the bench.
No, wait a minute. Say it again. The pitcher
and catcher usually are uh-huh. on the opposite team, and they're trying to strike you out. With this game, you have the pitcher and the batters all have to work together, and it's a timing. It goes ready, pitch, and it has to be out of the pitcher's hand and into the bat. And hopefully the batter will make contact with that ball via the actual pitcher, okay?
Right.
Once the ball has been hit and it goes out into the field, then either first or third, it's random, either first or third will be turned on. Can I just simulate it? The beep ball goes beep, 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 more or less. And then a base goes, okay, I hope that. This is a hearing sport.
Right. Yeah. The base will kind of buzz and the ball beeps.
Okay.
Sure.
And you don't beep, know, beep, beep. The batter doesn't know which base is going to start beeping.
No, it's just random.
Buzzing.
Right. The person who turns on the base doesn't know. He or she, whoever it is, will turn either first base on or third base. It's just random.
Now, and there's someone else turning them on.
Yes.
On the
there's a base operator that sits at the scores table.
Okay.
And they turn. It's a switch box. And it goes all the way down to first and all the way down to third. And there are wires. We're hoping one day we'll have wireless bases, but that's on the road. But if they get to the base before the fielders find it in the field, it's a run. However, if the fielders, which there are six, find it out in the field, then it's an out. And we have umpires coming all over from the United States that come here. They volunteer a week of their time. They come to the World Series as well as all my very qualified scorekeepers. I have around 10 of each or a little bit more because last year we had 24 teams, and so I had to have 12 of each. So it's a wonderful sport. You know, it doesn't make any difference whether they've been blind since birth. They could have been robbed by an illness or an eye disease or diabetes. We have several gunshot mm-hmm. wounds, and we are also trying to work with the Veterans Administration to find those guys and girls, because this is a mm-hmm. dual sport here.
Sure.
That if they've been robbed of their sight, either in Afghanistan or Iraq or whatever, we're trying to begin to work with the Veterans Administration for after someone goes through rehab and they're, you know, getting back into society, if they'd like to play baseball, hey, this is going to be a second chance for them, and that's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's an acquired learning curve that I'm sure they improve upon once they get.
I have seen where girls and guys, you know, they run real choppy to the base, kind of scared. And once they really get into the sport and they're, yeah. you know, a few seasons in, I mean, their mobility skills just skyrocket. And that just doesn't mean in the game.
Yeah.
It also helps in their regular personal life. It really does.
Now, the bases are padded, I believe.
Yes, so they're padded, yes.
And they're
they
taller than regular bases.
Oh, yeah. Well, they stand about, what, almost five feet tall.
They kind of look like a kickboxing
Okay, like
pylon,
a
you know, that you would
tackle dummy or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, to your question about the learning curve, Iowa actually has a beat baseball team mm-hmm. that was started in 2012. The first year Ames hosted this World Series. And I was talking to their coach this week, you know, in getting prepared for the tournament, and he said, this is a completely different team than we fielded in 2012. Yeah. We were lucky to not, you know, we got, I think they hit one they didn't win a single game. So, you know, but now he said, I think we'll actually win a couple of games in this tournament this
just like
year
any,
round.
Just
so,
like any sport, yeah. Sure. You have to work with your team and everyone to for everybody to gel, and I'm glad to hear that. There, yeah. We've got a couple new teams that are going to be in the World Series this year, one from Seattle. Let's see, and another team from Indianapolis that is coming, and then a new team that actually they have a pitcher from another team that jumped over to San Antonio because he got transferred over there. So
now,
he started
another
team.
I've got a question about the pitchers, though. The pitchers have to see, right?
The pitcher and the catcher both see. Okay. And also there are two people in the field also called spotters. There can be up to two spotters in the field with the six fielders out there. When the ball is hit, there are we call them imaginary coordinates out there, and they practice with those imaginary coordinates all summer long. Mm-hmm. When the ball is hit, and if the spotter yells five, then the fielders know what direction the ball is coming to mm-hmm. them, and that person cannot say one more word, just one number and one number only. And then it's up to the fielders to mm-hmm. say, if the ball goes past them, they'll go, by me left or by me right. Mm-hmm. And then it'll go past them, and hopefully the fielder behind it will either they'll drop down and block the ball with their body. And they have to have the ball in control, away from their body, off the ground, for the umpire to yell, caught. If it yells caught and it's away from their body, it's off the ground before the batter gets to the base, then it's this out. Otherwise, it's a run.
Well, Allison, hold that next thought. This is KHOY Community Radio 89.1. We're at Local Talk today with our host, Kay Puttick, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. We're visiting with Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau with her special guest, Jan Trappen.
Trappagan
from the National Beep Baseball Association.
Right, I'm coming from Indianapolis.
So how many teams, what's the most distant any of the teams have traveled to come to Ames
probably,
this year?
I'm looking here, and I think it's probably Seattle. We have Austin, Atlanta, Tyler, Texas, Seattle, Houston, let's see. We have like four or five teams from Texas. Of course, there's Iowa, Boston, mm-hmm. Minnesota, Colorado. There's Phoenix, Southwest
goodness.
Slammers, Indy, Chicago, Rochester, New York. And before I even go any further, I want to say we're really happy to be back here.
Yeah, this is the second time.
Second time, and they do an absolutely marvelous job for mm-hmm. us. AMCVB with Sean and Megan and Allison and all the Julies mm-hmm. there and everybody yeah. there are just wonderful working mm-hmm. with. And the Lions, Iowa Lions clubs have been absolutely fabulous. And we'd also like mm-hmm. to thank all the wonderful individuals in the community here mm-hmm. oh, yeah. that have come out to volunteer. We really appreciate it because this is a hearing sport, and we cannot do this without sighted volunteers, believe me. And mm-hmm. also Mike Boone with Adaptive Sports. They've been fabulous. Mm-hmm. And we're just excited to be here again. Mm-hmm. And our first game starts tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We have a round mm-hmm. robin.
And where's that? Where's the field located?
It's on University between, yeah, you have to say. But it's at
the
Iowa
Southeast
Sports Complex.
Southeast Athletic Complex. It's the intramural fields across University Boulevard from Jack Trice Stadium.
Okay.
And between there and the golf course, you can see the golf course off to the east. So. And that, you know, tomorrow is a long day, and Jan mentioned volunteers. We are still looking for volunteers. You can give our office a call.
Oh, well, come on out. Yeah.
It takes the volunteers, six volunteers per field, and we have 10 fields.
Oh, wow.
And we have three games on all 10 fields. So we've got 30 games tomorrow, and we need about six volunteers for each field. So, and then, of course, as the tournament goes on, it's, you know, fewer games per day. But it's going to be a busy week, and it's going to take lots of volunteers. So if anyone's interested, no training necessary. We'll train you out
there. Train you right
there
on the spot.
Yep. And we'd really invite anyone that's interested to give our office a call.
You have to be pretty athletic to be – what will the volunteers be doing?
Oh, no.
No, you don't need to be athletic. They'll just be out on the field helping to spot, helping to – there'll be someone on first base and someone on third base.
To set the base back up when they go over it, when they, you know, make a run or make an out, whichever. Yeah. But no, they just need to be by the base and throw their arms up so the umpire knows that they've actually hit the base. Mm-hmm. The games are at 9 a.m., 11:30, and 2:30. And there are 10 games each time slot. And then Wednesday we have same game times, about 16 games. Thursday we have 22. Friday we have about 13. Saturday is our championship game. Anybody come out, please? It starts at 11 o'clock. Also in the morning, we have a wool game, which is all-ladies game at 8 o'clock at the same field. Okay. And come on out and watch. Mm-hmm. And bring a lawn chair, sunscreen, a hat, and a bottle of water.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what I say.
You know, the other thing about this, and we do invite you to come out all weekend long to watch and to cheer on the players. There's a little bit of etiquette here that we probably should mention. Mm-hmm. Because the ball is beeping and the base is buzzing, you can't cheer when the ball is hit.
Right.
Because the fielders need to hear that ball.
Mm-hmm. And even if he's going to look like he's going to make a home run, you can't do that until the play is over.
Right. So then once the play is over, that's when you cheer.
Okay. Okay.
But, you know, you have to think about that. You can't cheer when somebody does a hit.
This is called baseball, but it's like a big softball.
It's a regular Wilson baseball, and they drill a core out. They put an electronic module in there.
But it's bigger, isn't it?
Oh, maybe just a wee bit, but not much. And then they drill a core out. They put an electronic module in there with a pin. And then they sew it. They lace it back up. And then when you pull the plug out, that's when it starts to beep. And then when you put the plug back in, then it stops beeping. But it's a wonderful sport. It really is. And I can tell you that I've seen a lot of changes in not only kids but adults. Mm-hmm. Their motivation of life goes up. Their self-worth goes up. I mean, it's the first time they may have ever had a sense of teamwork.
Well, uplifting. How uplifting this is.
It's wonderful.
You know? So now hear this.
And we thank you so much for having us here.
Well, the KHOY community can come down and meet people from all over the nation.
Right.
And contribute to this National Beep Baseball opportunity.
We do have a website.
Who knew? Yeah.
NBBA.org. And anybody can go and just scroll around and see pictures and just see everything that we're all about. So
it's the National Beep Baseball Association.
It is.
NBBA.org.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You can always get to the information from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau website, which we say over and over every month, and that's visitames.com.
Well, Allison, maybe I'm curious, what does this mean to you to have this come here to Ames,
It's
Iowa?
Wonderful, and it's a great, even for our local economy.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 20 teams of players and their family. I picked Jan up at the hotel this morning, and there were kids in the breakfast room. You know, so people, they bring their families the tournament. I believe, you know, we count our success by the number of hotel rooms and how many people are staying in hotel rooms, and they're paying the hotel motel tax, which then comes to the Bureau to market the community and to bring groups like this into town. And I think it's about 1,500 hotel rooms for this tournament alone. We have completely filled the Quality Inn and Suites out on 13th Street. We have teams at four or five other hotels in the community. And, of course, they're out in the community eating meals at the restaurants and
buying groceries.
And so it is a great economic impact for the community.
So they're right across the road from Jack Trice Field.
Yes, right.
What a great opportunity to come out and learn about and see something
bring
special.
Bring your kids.
New.
Bring anybody. Come out. Bring your kids. And
I think
and
it's just fantastic.
Let them see the blind athletes play wonderful ball. So,
okay. We've been talking to Alison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and her special guest who's here for the World Series of Baseball. I keep saying basketball.
That's okay. Baseball.
Baseball. I do know the difference. we're so glad to have you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
You. And now this is a tune, since we're going to be talking about the convention, this is a tune that's very good for both Republicans and Democrats to listen to at this time.
You can say that you stand apart, put a fence around your yard. You can build a tall rampart, guard it with a gun. You can dig yourself a moat, burn the bridge and burn the boat. It won't matter that much, you know, 'cause all the world is one. All the world is one. You can march in a big parade every Independence Day. You can raise up your own flag, sing your own anthem. It'll ring out in the air with the other anthems there. Winds of the earth declare, all the world is one, all the world is one. Go and ask the Buddha when he's sitting under the tree. Go ask Walt Whitman when he's looking out at the sea. Ask Alan Shepard when he's standing up on the moon, staring at that pearl of blue. Ask an atom in the breath you take, ask the water by the river bank, ask a strand of DNA, it's written in your blood. One life running in your veins, one life from one big bang. You can try and separate it, but all the world is one, all the world is one. Ask Annie Dillard when she's up on good
creek. We're now happy to welcome former Republican State Representative Teresa Garmon, who's come to give us her take on the Republican Convention.
Thank you. Welcome
to Local Talk, Teresa.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you already know Pat, your neighbors.
Oh, yeah. She, Ms. Garmon was my representative maybe 20 years ago. We used to talk somewhere
right.
about then. Gosh, it's great to see you again.
Actually, 14. I was there 16 years.
Okay. Well, it's great to see you again. So have you just returned from the Republican National Convention?
No, I did not go this year.
But I
said I couldn't walk as much as I would need to walk.
Okay. Yeah. But what was your impressions?
Actually, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought that it was a good convention.
Oh, you had apprehension, maybe?
I did.
A little bit?
I thought there might be some problems outside, which there weren't.
Right, yes. Yeah. That was, a lot of people were surprised by that. I think.
Boy, and the Cleveland Police Force seemed to be just stellar.
They did a wonderful job.
They seemed to be. It just goes to show when
they
were all pulling together.
And I was surprised and pleased by the number of speakers from different walks of life that were there.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciated hearing from them.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anyone that stuck out in particular among the speakers?
Well, of course, Joni Ernst. And
I missed that one, actually. I didn't get to see her.
And our former New York mayor, I think, stole the show.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. And then there was a minister that riled up the crowd. He was pretty darn good.
Wasn't that inspirational?
That was. Yeah. That was.
Yeah.
And Ivanka, of course, did a beautiful job. There were a lot of good speakers whose names I can't tell you because, like I say, they were from different parts of life. That
just citizens of the different communities.
Absolutely.
That had a message to share.
And they did it well.
Well, and not to pry, but I know Iowa delegation had endorsed Senator Cruz. How did that unfold? Was there disappointment that Senator Cruz was not included with the endorsements? And
Well, Senator Cruz was included.
Well, I mean, as a speaking role, but yes. It seemed that some people were hoping to cast their appreciation.
Trump got more votes. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, okay.
You got more votes. You get more votes, you win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there was an attempt at the beginning with the Rules Committee and so on, too.
Yes, and I'm glad that failed.
Yes. That was cleared up pretty quickly.
That would have been very disappointing to have the person who got the most votes not win.
Okay, yeah, in the overall picture. Uh-huh. Well, what else?
You mentioned Ivanka Trump's speech. That's Trump's daughter. And it was interesting to me that she stressed the importance of child care and, you know, like women's issues, working mothers and so on. And I thought Mr. Trump might follow up on that, but he didn't. He kind of let that go, which seemed a lost opportunity to me.
Well, he sure talked about a lot of things.
He went
through so many issues, and most of which I supported. I thought he did a great job. He should give more speeches like that.
Okay.
It was kind of a dark speech, though, a sort of apocalyptic almost.
But this is a dark time. We have
really
a lot of
so?
Problems. I'm very concerned about our country right now.
What are your chief concerns?
Well, the debt. Goodness sakes, how are we ever going to get out of that? And they continue to spend and spend. And I don't see us in any way trying to get rid of the debt.
So you'd like to see that become a real pivotal issue.
That is a very big issue to me.
For the campaigns this fall.
And then ISIS and what's happening, and I think it's going to be happening here at home.
The concern of the domestic terrorism happening here on the American shores.
I do have.
Uh-huh.
The thing is about domestic terrorism, though, a lot of the people who've been, a lot of the terrorists here, they were born in this country. And their parents are absolutely shocked by what they've done. So they've become radicalized after they were here, which is, you know, there must be something we can do about that.
Yeah, I would hope that there would be, but I don't know what the answer is to that.
Okay.
How about the music? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, my gosh. I've gone to 3 national conventions. And I don't remember anybody dancing in the aisles at any of those.
But there was a bit of trouble about the music because it was apparently used without permission, the Rolling Stones and George Harris's estate complained that they used their music without permission.
Well, I hadn't heard that.
Yes.
But that's been out there forever.
Well, you know, they didn't endorse it, and they complained. And in fact, the George Harris estate said, or Harrison is his name, you know, the ex-Beatle, said instead of playing "Here Comes the Sun," they should have played "Here Comes the Darkness."
Well, there was some controversy about millennials. How did that unfold for you?
That was too bad because she did a wonderful job.
It was a nice speech, actually.
Yeah,
on the
that was too yeah, bad, was. But yeah. It appears from what I have heard that their speechwriter is gone and that she might have been a registered Democrat. So,
oh, a little skullduggery.
Yes,
going
that's,
on.
That
oh,
may have I, been. May, I don't
yeah,
know.
Might have been. But
it's too bad. It was a beautiful speech.
Well, our media does pick up on anything controversial.
That's for sure.
But there were... So you thought there were a lot of highlights. How did it compare to the other 3 conventions that you had attended?
It was totally different.
Yeah? Different in what ways?
Well, it was, like I said, dancing in the aisles and the music and whatever. I don't remember any of that. I think the others were more serious.
Okay.
And, of course, I helped write the platform, at least 2 of those. So I was more involved in some of the more serious things.
Okay, sure, sure. Well, what would you like to share with our listening community in reference to the convention? But how does your heart lean towards what's coming
course,
up?
Well, of course, Donald Trump was not my first choice. I was supporting Rubio.
Now, what did you like about Marco Rubio?
Well, I had spent for how many years? We'd been going to Florida for 40 years, and we'd been spending 6 months down there for 14 years probably. And so I supported Marco Rubio the first time he ran.
I see.
That was primarily because he was running against Charlie Crist, and I didn't like Charlie Crist.
Oh, okay. He changed his party.
Yes, he did. He went to Republican to Democrat to Independent.
Yeah.
But then I watched Marco, and I have met him a few times, and I thought he was more electable.
I see.
And so that was who I was supporting.
But as they say in the big picture of things, Mr. Trump got more votes.
That's so right. It comes down to one person.
He is the Republican.
And I am a bit annoyed with the never-Trumpers, the Republicans who are never-Trumpers, because I don't want Hillary Clinton in the White House.
I see. So that'll be prominent in your thoughts for the next few days, apparently.
Yes, it is, and I have been speaking with some people about that.
Yeah. And what do you bring up with is it people in the Democratic Party or
No, Republican never Trumpers.
I see.
Okay. Yeah.
We've had some conversations.
Yeah.
Now, one thing about Trump's speech, I don't know how specific people can get in these kind of events, but he was sort of saying, all these problems, he was just basically saying, I'll fix it without specifics. I don't know. And some of his statistics about crime, I think, were off.
Well, I have read that his speech was vetted by the media, and they could not find that his facts were not solid.
Okay.
So his facts were solid. Dark. I noticed that dark was the word that about 8 different newspapers used. So they must have gotten the message that that was the word they were supposed to use in regard to the speech. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he made mistakes in that speech. I think he did a good job.
How about his lack of specifics? It was just basically, trust me, I'll fix it.
Well, how much time would he have to give you specifics? And do you want to tell people? I don't like the fact that Obama says, we're going to send these many people over there to do this. You don't tell the enemy what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You don't tell people what you're going to do. And we all know that anybody that's running for president that says, I'm going to do, you know he can't do it without Congress. And she can't do it without Congress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is what we would like to see done.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes.
Representative Teresa Garmon, a longtime resident of Story County.
Since 1965.
Thank you for your service when you were in the legislature a few years ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I ran in 87 and retired in 2002.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And thank you for coming out so early this morning.
Yes, that's fine. I'm an early riser, so thank you for having me.
That's our pleasure.
We've been listening to Teresa Garmon, former representative, and she's been talking about the Republican Convention. Earlier, we were talking with Allison Water of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau and with Jan Traphagen, first vice president of the National Beep Basketball Association.
Oh, that would be baseball. Excuse me.
I keep saying basketball.
It is the National Beep Baseball.
I don't know why I keep saying basketball.
Both
begin with B and end with ball, I guess.
And Ms. Traphagen is the chairman of the World Series Tournament Committee to the Beep Baseball League that Ames is hosting. So
get out there this week. They do need volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something else. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, or just drop by the studio at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames, where you're always welcome. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to this show and all our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. You'll find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it.
And KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of the KHOI's other shows. And now stay tuned for Morning Masterpieces. And please remember that you, as our listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations to help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.